high school boys and girls are having a hop at the local soda fountain. Innocently, they dance. Innocent of a new and deadly menace lurking behind closed doors. Marijuana, the burning weed with its roots in hell.
National views on marijuana have changed a lot since the 1936 film Reefer Madness. The wacky tobacco is now legal in Washington and Colorado for recreational purposes. It might be easy to assume that the Midwest is a ways away from this West Coast attitude, but there are active efforts underway in both Missouri and Kansas to decriminalize marijuana. And some Missouri activists are even pushing for decriminalization without age limits, because why would we want to pass something less than what Colorado's got? Does that sound make you nervous? Whether it's your friend or foe, today's Central Standard on KCUR is all about marijuana in the Midwest. I'm Gina Kaufman. Let's meet our guests. First, we'll hear from Jamie Kaz. She's with us from Normal KC. That's the Kansas City chapter of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. So it's probably no secret where she stands on the legal aspects of the marijuana debate. Jamie, is that fair?
That is fair, yes.
You started the Kansas City chapter of Normal last year, is that right?
Yes, at the end of August.
What inspired you to do that?
Well, it was definitely a few different things that sparked my interest with it. I had been a closet activist for some time, and a recent trip to Colorado and experiencing their legal cannabis industry definitely opened my eyes to see the tax revenue that they were getting in, the jobs they were creating. And that kind of started my research. And I'd always known for a while that cannabis could help certain conditions like glaucoma or seizures, help with cancer patients who are going through chemotherapy. But as I started to research more, I had no idea that cannabis has shown to benefit so many other ailments like Alzheimer's disease, autism, seizures.
And we'll be talking with a doctor shortly about some of these medical issues.
Yes.
But please go on about like your personal motivations for getting active on the level of starting a chapter of Normal.
Yes, and finding out all that information is definitely what sparked that. My father had passed away a few years back from, he had had an aneurysm and he had had neurological issues. He was paralyzed on one side, and knowing that cannabis could have possibly helped him, it wouldn't have cured him, but it could have gave him a better quality of life. It could have helped him cope with his depression and cope with having to deal with his condition better. And I truly believe that. And if I would have known then what I know now, I would have definitely tried to have him be open to trying some type of alternative treatment. So after learning that...
You don't think he would have been open to it easily?
I think he would have been. I think at a certain point, he would have been willing to try anything to make himself feel better, to give him that quality of life. And once I figured that out and I reached out to local resources, we didn't have a local Normal chapter. So that's what inspired me to start this, because I wanted to be able to inform the people and inform the public that there are benefits of cannabis. It's not just a bunch of people wanting to hang out and get stoned. There's a lot more to it than just that.
How long have you lived in Kansas City?
All my life.
How would you describe the culture you grew up in here in the Midwest?
The culture, it's definitely a close-knit culture. It is a great city to live in, very welcoming, very friendly, but still, it is still a conservative state, so people are not very comfortable talking about cannabis still. They are still scared. They are scared of all because of all the propaganda that they've been fed their entire lives.
When you were coming of age, what were the messages you received about marijuana, and who did you receive them from?
Just say no. through my DARE program in third grade. That was, I remember going through that and almost thinking it was a little silly at the time, but it was just say no. It was the 90s. It was, we didn't talk about marijuana.
So not talking about it, I mean, DARE was a national program, but not talking about it, does that seem something that's sort of special to the Midwestern relationship to this thing? I mean, I know you're not an expert on this. I don't expect you to have hard science. Just your perception of how people interact with ideas around this drug.
I would say because it is still criminalized, it is still a Schedule I drug, that people are a little less willing to discuss it or less likely to look into that as an alternative option for them medically. People, like I said, people are scared and they shouldn't have to be scared. And the more people are starting to talk about it, the more everybody will start to talk about it.
Most things that are illegal are things that mainstream society also generally shuns. Like, armed robbery isn't just illegal. It's also very roundly considered just totally morally unacceptable. I'd say that exceeding the speed limit is kind of an exception there. Lots of people are fairly casual about speeding. They just try not to get caught. These days, which category do you think pot use falls into? Again, just based on personal observation.
As far as pot use, people use. I mean, there's a black market for it, and that black market's going to be there until we get a system in place to where we are regulating it and we have it available in a safe alternative ways.
In the last few years, there's been a legal shift in some states decriminalizing marijuana to different degrees, whether it's reducing penalties for possession or opening things up for medical uses, or in the case of Colorado and Washington, even for recreational purposes. What's going on in our area?
Well, in our area, actually, in Missouri, New Approach Missouri just handed in over 260,000 petitions, or actually over 260,000 signatures for medical cannabis to go on the 2016 ballot. So,
and right now those are being looked at, right, to be sure they're from actual Missouri voters.
Correct. So they're going through them right now, verifying all of the signatures.
And there's a woman known as, kind of casually, as the pot mom in Kansas. The woman who has Crohn's disease.
Yes.
Could you talk a little bit about what she's been up to?
Shauna Banna?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, she is an activist. Her son had spoken at school about some facts on cannabis, and I believe it was during his DARE program, if I remember correctly, and they raided her house and took away her child, which was awful because she was using cannabis for her Crohn's disease. It was one of the only methods that worked for her, and she suffered for that because they took her child away.
Also in Kansas, last year, Wichita voters moved to reduce penalties for possession of small amounts of marijuana, and then that was overturned by the Kansas Supreme Court. But were you surprised to see that voters in Wichita approved that measure?
No, not at all. Not at all. A recent Gallup poll has shown about 80% of Americans are for medical cannabis being legalized. So it's not a surprise. It's, you know, the more and more states that are legalizing it recreationally and medically, other states are going to follow.
In your outreach and your role as executive director of Normal KC, as you talk to people about what you're doing and your push to loosen some of the pot regulations, what kinds of responses have you gotten? And has anything surprised you about maybe like who supports it and who doesn't and why not?
Oh, absolutely. Very surprised on the amount of people that do support it. Again, I wasn't a big person to talk about cannabis use before and the benefits of it, but now that I am actively speaking about it more, so many people are for it. And it's not just certain types of people. It's, you know, it's Christians, it's Republicans, it's Democrats, it's the elderly. There are so many people. So it's not just one type of person.
I want to know what our listeners think. Have attitudes toward marijuana changed in your Midwestern community? Do you see it being treated or approached differently than it used to be? Does pot smoking go against Midwestern values, or is it something people do here that we just don't talk about much? 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Let's hear now from Jennifer Lowry. She's a doctor at Children's Mercy Hospital, where she works in clinical pharmacology, medical toxicology, and pediatrics. In other words, she knows a lot about drugs. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Do you see changes in how people relate to marijuana and attitudes toward that drug?
Very much so. So again, I'm a pediatrician and I work at Children's Mercy, so I only see children and adolescents. But I think because of the changes that we've had in the state, especially in Colorado and Washington, the perceptions by adolescents on the risk to using marijuana has markedly decreased.
How do you feel about that?
Makes me a little nervous. As we know, the adolescent brain isn't finished forming all of its connections until about the age of 25. Drugs that get into the brain, whether it's actually those that we use medically that are approved by the Food and Drug Administration or those that are not, can actually adversely affect the adolescent in regard to their judgment and motivation. It makes me a little bit nervous about what that means for their future.
What do we know about marijuana, like the plant's history, its chemical properties, its effect on human biology, psychology?
Well, we do know that, I mean, marijuana has been used for eons. I mean, it's a plant. It's natural. It grows, you know, in the past, wild, now in people's
backyards.
And people, right, it's a weed, so, and it grows in people's backyards now. But it's been used for quite some time. And in the past, you know, it was, as a weed, it just had the chemicals that it had at that time, and it wasn't almost bred to be the better plant that we have now. And what has happened over time is that as we've kind of bred it, it's actually become more potent. And so the marijuana that we have now is not the marijuana of the past. And so the comparison of, you know, maybe the 1960s when people were getting high is a little bit different than we have now. And we have other forms of getting that marijuana. And
other forms, like, besides?
Well, you know, you grow it, and then you can use the chemicals that are in it to put into, as Colorado, and we know the edibles and different sorts of ways to ingest it or inhale it, which obviously is a concern as a pediatrician. The last thing is that we know that marijuana is actually very similar to tobacco in that it has more than one chemical in it. Most people use marijuana for the THC, the euphoric effects that you can get marijuana for, and that's actually the drug that is used in primarily for the anti-nausea in those that have cancer. But we know that there are at least 400 other chemicals, if not more, in marijuana. So when you inhale it, you not only get the THC, but you get the other things as well. And we don't necessarily understand all of the effects that those could have.
Yeah, I'm interested in how much we understand and how much we don't, because you hear both sides on this issue citing science.
Right.
And that makes it very confusing for the lay person who isn't totally immersed in this issue, you know, whose science is quote unquote real science. Or, for example, like, is there just an issue with having enough knowledge given the legal constraints around this substance?
Well, that's the problem with science, because it kind of depends on who's actually doing the studies and who is funding the studies and what the studies, when they're published on their interpretation of them. There are many who would say that marijuana is not addictive. I don't agree with that. There are many who would say that the whole plant can help from a medical marijuana kind of thing, and that's not true. And so it can be – but I totally understand that it can be confusing to the general public when we have both sides coming at them. And what I think it's missed is the medical science part of things. And so a lot of people want to have this approved and used without fully considering the societal ramifications and the health ramifications of children.
As a pediatrician, I mean, you were talking about increased potency since mm-hmm. the 1960s of marijuana. I mean, are there things that you have witnessed, incidents that have given you this sense that there is a danger here that people aren't fully recognizing, at least perhaps not anymore?
Well, thankfully, I actually haven't seen the small children who have gotten into the edibles, but I do work with the poison control system throughout the United States, and I'm one of the toxicologists at the University of Kansas Hospital Poison Control Center. And as part of those, we do get cases, especially even from Colorado and from Washington, of children whose parents have, the edibles or other forms of the marijuana, who have actually gotten into them and been harmed. Thankfully, there have been no deaths ever, actually, from marijuana, so that's actually a very good thing. But that doesn't mean harm isn't happening.
What kind of harm?
Well, we do know that they get what we call like CNS depressed, so they can get more sleepy. They can
CNS, what does that mean?
Central nervous system. Sorry, okay. Yeah. So they get altered mental status. They get wobbly. They can't walk. The children do, and they have to go into the hospital and get monitored until they are actually back to their baseline.
You know, we have this network of listeners we turn to with questions from time to time. It's called Tell KC, and we ask them how they feel about marijuana. And it was kind of interesting. I mean, people from our area across different divisions, be it race or age, there were a lot of different viewpoints on many aspects of marijuana, but there was a lot of support in general for medical uses of marijuana. And I wonder what your thoughts are on that.
So that also makes me nervous. I was involved in some of the responses to the Kansas bill that was just in the legislature this past year in regard to medical marijuana. And what they wanted it to be used is obviously the whole plant to be used for the treatment of Alzheimer's and the treatment of cancer, nausea, and Crohn's disease, but also seizures. And THC, the chemical that most use marijuana for, that may help the nausea in those with cancer in high doses, and actually in not very high doses, but high enough, can actually be what we call epileptogenic, which actually can cause seizures. And so there is actually a particular chemical in the marijuana plant, the cannabidiol, which has been if you actually remove that chemical from the plant, and actually the Food and Drug Administration is currently doing a study on its use for the treatment of seizures, is showing promise that seizures may actually be helped by using that particular chemical from the marijuana plant, but not the entire plant. And so I would argue that it needs to be studied further before we start actually having medical marijuana that includes other for other treatments that actually may cause more harm than good because they haven't been studied.
Why haven't they been studied, though?
Well, because it's a Schedule I drug. So the Drug Enforcement, the DEA, has made marijuana a Schedule I drug, which is actually up there with cocaine and methamphetamine. And what that necessarily means is that it's highly addictive and that it has no medical properties. I would argue, and I think everybody in this room would agree with me, that it probably doesn't need to be a Schedule I drug. And in fact, if you look at all the different drugs under each of the five scheduling, it doesn't make sense a lot of when you look at the medications and drugs that are on there, because marijuana is not methamphetamine. That said, in order for us to actually use medical marijuana as a or marijuana as a medical drug, I think that it needs to be fully studied so we actually don't cause harm and just kind of use it without actually having the evidence to support it.
The Midwest, I mean, at least legally, could be seen as something of a holdout now that there are serious efforts underway in so many states. And now here, too, there's a push. It's interesting, in those inquiries I was telling you about before, a lot of our respondents used language like it's time for us to catch up, or references to us being behind, which it's interesting because that language implies that increasing acceptance of marijuana use is equivalent to progress. What do you think about that?
That's so interesting to me. So Missouri is the only state in the country that does not have a prescription drug monitoring program. So we have a huge problem with prescription drugs and the fact that opiates are widely used and widely abused. And I see many children who come in with an opiate overdose. Yet we are the only state that doesn't actually monitor the prescriptions and the use of it. And I would actually argue that this is very similar to that, that, you know, we can't have it both ways. We can't be the only state that doesn't care about opiate overdoses, but then pass a marijuana law that allows us to do that, because it's actually the total polar opposite of each other.
I want to let Jamie Kaz back in on this. She's the executive director of Normal KC. And Jamie, I mean, do you see when you listened to the doctor here, do you see gray area on issues surrounding marijuana, or is it black and white to you?
There's definitely some gray area. I would agree with that. I agree that there has been also research. There's over 22,000 documents, if you go to PubMed, of research that's been done worldwide on cannabis. The states that have legalized cannabis medically, they've actually had a significant decrease in opioid overdoses. So that's definitely something important to keep in mind.
Jennifer Lowry, do you see gray area?
I do. Again, I think that we would all agree that it shouldn't be a Schedule I drug. I think that we would argue that and agree that there needs to be us to look at how we can do this within the law of how the Food and Drug Administration actually being able to evaluate it in the medical part of things.
When KCUR's Central Standard returns, one woman's personal story involving marijuana, her views have changed. Have yours. 816-235-2888. I'm Gina Kaufman. We'll be getting right back, and we'll be hearing from you. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today we're talking about attitudes toward marijuana in the Midwest. Perhaps we're not too surprised that states like California, Colorado, and Washington have been loosening legal restrictions on the drug in recent years. Those states have a certain kind of reputation, but there are enough independent efforts along those lines in Kansas and Missouri that we got to wondering, what is the climate like here? I've been chatting with Jamie Kaz of Normal KC and Dr. Jennifer Lowry, a doctor with expertise in medical toxicology. She's a pediatrician with us from Children's Mercy Hospital. Let's check in with our callers. We've got people with things to say at 816-235-2888. Let's talk to Sean and Lenexa. Hi, Sean.
Hey.
Thanks for joining the conversation.
Awesome conversation so far.
Thanks.
I just wanted to say that I moved from Denver a couple months ago. I spent a year there to see what it was all about. And there's like a marked difference between the plant marijuana and all the different products that they're selling there. They're like much more concentrated forms of marijuana that they sell. We don't have any kind of research on it, I feel, because we don't have a federal policy.
So you're interested in the legal aspects of what was going on there, but I'm curious, culturally, do you think that Kansas City's attitudes toward marijuana are different from the attitudes you saw in Denver, or do you think it's our policies that are different, or both?
I think it's our policies. I think pretty much everybody wants weed to be legal, but our governments don't want it. And you see, I used to live in North Carolina as well, and lots of people smoke weed. It's just, it's legal.
All right. Well, thanks, Sean. So, Sean, you're saying that you thought what you experienced in Colorado was good. You liked it.
Yeah, it is. I just think we need more research into the different forms, because, like, the highly concentrated forms of marijuana might not be appropriate, you know?
All right. Well, thanks so much for that call. We have had a couple of calls about listeners' experiences in Colorado. Helen called in. She wasn't able to stay on the line, but she said she went to Colorado on vacation last summer and found her experience kind of unpleasant. She said, there were so many people high and some coming up to our car. I felt really sad, but she's 100% for medical marijuana. She just felt a certain sadness in the air around this culture with so many people being high, I guess. I don't know. Jamie, I mean, you talk to a lot of people about medical marijuana, about decriminalization and legalization in general. Are there differing views on how people see a society where marijuana is consumed more freely?
I think people that are maybe more against cannabis could see it as a negative. They might have in their mind that over in Denver, everybody's running around stoned out of their mind and don't know what they're doing. But that's really not the case.
And you went there on a trip?
Yes, I have been there several times. It's a beautiful city, beautiful people. Sun is always shining. And I did not experience anything negative where people were kind of running around crazy and being high or being medicated.
Well, we're going to get back to our callers shortly, but let's turn now to a guest who wants to go by first name only. Her name is Jessica, and she has a story to share. Hi, Jessica.
Hi.
Your attitudes toward marijuana have shifted somewhat in recent years, not for reasons having to do with laws or societal trends or anything like that, but for personal reasons. Can you tell us the story of how and why that happened?
So I have been diagnosed with chronic pain and an autoimmune condition, and I've been living with that for the last 7 years. And I have tried everything the doctors have asked of me, every single medication available, and I've reacted to every single one with some pretty serious side effects, including passing out randomly. I had hair loss, which is not so serious, but the passing out constantly was pretty big deal. My body does not like the medications that I've been given, and so pretty much as a last resort, I had a doctor recommend it and a friend provide it, and I tried cannabis, and I found it to be extremely helpful for lowering my pain, making life worth living. I was no longer suicidal, and I was able to do a lot more and function a lot better than I was previously, and I feel that it's given me my life back, and I'm very grateful for that. And I think when I talk to other people and when they talk about their own experiences with this plant, it is seen as, they see it as healing them and making life worth living. And that's important to really consider in this argument. And when people talk about, you know, the propaganda with the concerns of children getting high, I don't think that when it comes to, it doesn't balance out correctly compared to the amount of help it can give the majority of the people out there. And there has to be responsible use and there has to be regulation. And I think that that's doable. And I think that the Midwest is ready for that. And I think that the reason more people don't talk about it like I am right now is because it's criminalized. And that's the only danger associated with cannabis, is that it's criminalized. It is there, you can't die from it. You cannot overdose from it. Whereas the painkillers that I was on, and, you know, we're giving our children Oxycontin. That's okay. That's 100% addicting. You can overdose from that, yet we won't let them have access to cannabis, which is life-saving, and not, you can't overdose from it. It boggles my mind. I don't understand it.
I'll get the pediatrician in the room to respond to some of what you've said shortly, but I want to stick with your story a little bit. I mean, how old were you when this friend gave you cannabis and you tried it in an attempt to find remedies for conditions that so far, you know, you hadn't been able to find them for? How old were you?
I would say 25 or 26. And yes, you're right. I was looking for relief, not to get high. And I do get relief from my symptoms, and that's helpful.
Okay, so how did you see marijuana before that happened? You're 25 years old. You have this transformative experience. What were your attitudes previously?
So there's that, you know, stoner mentality, and people are just getting high because it's fun. You get lazy, you eat, and that's not really what it's about at all from a medical standpoint. It truly is a medicine, and it does need to be looked at that way.
So are you saying that before that you had kind of believed the things that you had heard along those
correct.
Lines?
Correct. I bought into the propaganda. That's right. I didn't see it for what it is that I do see as a medicine now. I didn't have the knowledge then.
As someone living in Kansas City, and you're talking about propaganda that you were receiving, can you flesh that out a little bit? I mean, what were the sources, what were people saying around you, or how were people behaving that had given you the idea that this was the prevalent attitude toward marijuana?
So you hear a lot, I would hear a lot that cannabis, that marijuana was a gateway drug. And that if you started out with that, you were definitely going to wind up doing harder stuff. And the only thing that causes cannabis to be a gateway drug is because it is the black market, and those dealers do have access to harder drugs. And that is what happens. If cannabis is legalized and regulated, that's not an option. And cannabis is available. It is out there, and people don't talk about it, but it is available. Kids are able to try that if they want. And if it's regulated, that might not even be an option for those kids to have access to it.
So for you, now that you've had this experience, and it sounds like you're fairly comfortable talking about it.
I believe that it's important to talk about it.
Do you have the sense, as you talk about it with friends, with family, with whoever, that your experience is well understood, that people are sympathetic in your community, or do you feel like that's not the case, that people that you have sort of an uphill climb in that sense?
As far as family and friends, they've been extremely supportive, and that includes older relatives as well. It's not really looked at as something taboo. When I tell people that are close to me that I use it for medical purposes. When it comes to my doctors, a lot of doctors support me in this, but they are not allowed to really discuss further about it because of the FDA regulations. And so it really hinders that relationship between my doctors and I being able to talk freely about what helps my conditions. And so that's really interesting because that a lot of people don't even feel comfortable talking to their doctors about it. And that's unfortunate because it is so helpful of a medication.
Jessica, thanks so much for sharing your story this morning.
Thank you.
Jennifer Lowry, as a pediatrician, what is your response to hearing some of what you just heard Jessica describe? To go from suffering from symptoms that were leaving her so helpless that she says she was at one point suicidal, to feeling that she had a remedy, you know, is that compelling to you? Because you have talked about the dangers also of marijuana.
So I'm really sorry about your health problems, and I know that many people are in pain, and I'm glad you found relief. But I know that you are probably one of many who feel this way, and have been improved by that. But I was caught by one of the things that you said. And maybe you need to clarify it a little bit better, in that you said, you know, kind of compared the adverse health effects that could happen in children, and that actually those shouldn't take, excuse me, as much weight as the health benefits that you receive. And I have great problem with that. we know, again, that no matter what Sean says, but we know that even the marijuana that is smoked now is more potent. The fact that we, even if we were to make it legalized, that does not get rid of the black market, because someone will still come up to the children and say, hey, this weed was good, but this is going to be better. There's always going to be a black market. There's a black market for opiates right now. I do not discount the fact that opiates are worse, that people do die from opiates. There is a quite a bit of, and we don't even, again, have that prescription drug monitoring program. But we still have adolescents who, when 40% of adolescents still get high, that's a problem, especially as they get into cars and they don't understand and they get into accidents.
A complex issue that we could probably, if we were going to just debate medical marijuana right now, we could do that for another 6 hours. So we've heard a lot of compelling arguments, I think, on both sides, and I'm sure our listeners are forming their own conclusions. But I want to get more of a sense of what our listeners out there think about this right now. Let's talk to John in Liberty. Hi, John.
Hi, thank you for having me. I just wanted to add that, you know, I'm a 42-year-old, and I'm I feel like I'm a spinning image of shape, but I've been smoking for 20 years, and I've been in the Union Iron Workers for 20 years, and I just feel like it adds to my life, and I'm just so tired of being a criminal, you know. And then, like you say, you have to get your marijuana from the black market, and I just feel like it's such a horrible experience being a criminal for over 20 years, Benz. I feel like I'm just such a great person and try to pitch in with my community and do everything I can to help out. That's pretty much all I have to add.
What is your sense of the culture around marijuana use in Liberty?
I don't feel like there is a very much of a marijuana culture. I feel like the people that smoke typical do between them and their very few friends. And I really haven't experienced a marijuana culture in Liberty, to tell you the truth.
All right. Well, thanks for that call, John.
Thank you.
And let's turn now to Connie. Connie is with us from Overland Park. Hi, Connie.
Hi there.
Thanks for joining us. What can you share?
Well, my concern, well, I just say my comment, is about the accountability piece. My sister's been a public school teacher and administrator in Colorado for close to 30 years, and my son goes to college there. So I get a lot of feedback from them. And here's what I think needs to be added to the entire discussion. When marijuana was made legal for medical purposes and then for recreational purposes, there was no accountability system in place to manage it. So when it became legal for medical purposes, anybody who could find the right doctor, and many places had doctors that would do this, for $200 you could get a marijuana card. And you just go in and say, oh, I have headaches, oh, I feel bad. And you could get medical marijuana. So there was no policing, there was no system in place for monitoring that.
This might
now
sound
that
like
it's recreational.
Oh, sorry, go on.
Now that it's recreational, there's no quality control, and this gets to what Dr. Lowry was saying. There's no mechanism in place for determining the quality and potency of what's being sold. Everything else that we ingest, our food, alcohol, drugs, all of that has to be monitored for safety and for the purpose for which it's designed. That's not happening. Those systems weren't in place, and I think they're trying to develop those after the fact. But that seems to me to be the backwards way to go around it. I think you need to have the system thought out, all the safety features in place, if you're going to make it legal, and so that you can keep it safe for people.
Thank you, Connie. You know, and it's interesting because we have talked about this chicken and egg problem of the legal status of a drug, making it difficult to study it, and then not having studies, making it difficult to assess certain safety and regulation issues. I want to very quickly hear from Kevin. Kevin in Kansas City, Kansas. Hi, Kevin.
Hello.
What can you share?
My two things were, as far as generations seeing marijuana differently, I recently saw my grandparents, which are both in their 80s, and a shocker to my brother and I, my grandmother asked my brother if you can overdose from marijuana. Of course, you can, but you would die from the smoke inhalation before overdosing from THC. And once she found this out, she grabbed it from her purse and gave my brother some edibles she was just thinking about taking because she is in severe pain, being her 80s, her body's failing on her.
Kevin, I want to back up for a second because you were saying that you were shocked, but we don't know your grandmother. And I am really interested in this piece of it that I'm really trying to get to, which is the cultural piece of it. Can you describe to us sort of your sense of who your grandmother is and what relationship that might have to someone who either does or doesn't have an interest in marijuana?
Well, she's the best grandmother in the world. She's originally, both my grandparents were very conservative Republican. Past 10 years, they've turned more towards Democrats. In their old age, they've kind of really started to think, I think, is like, it's you, your person. Why should I have to tell you, based on my religion or my politics, what you should do? And just kind of, we start getting older, you kind of, I would imagine, start kind of opening up on different things. Like, my life is coming to an end. So if there's a way to make this more comfortable, why should I not be able to do it?
And she seemed to think that you and your brother would know the answer to her questions about marijuana. Did that surprise you?
No, I myself don't smoke it. My brother, yes, he does. He's been in all sorts of different drugs. For my brother, no, we weren't surprised. Everyone basically knows that my brother does smoke marijuana.
So what is your sense of where attitudes are now? I mean, you called to tell us about your grandmother, and I wonder what you think her story illustrates.
Say it again.
I wonder what you think your grandmother's story illustrates for us about just the Midwest and possibly changing attitudes toward this plant.
Basically, just I think opinions and all over changing, no matter what the age group are, because people are realizing that it's not a evil thing. As like the beginning of the show told, I had a 1939 advertisement about marijuana. People are realizing that's not true, and it's just opinions are changing. Yes, we do need to look more into it, just not make it completely legal across the board, and we do need to make sure that it's healthy. And it's just,
well, thanks for that call, Kevin, and keep them coming at 816-235-2888. KCUR Central Standard has to take one more break, and this one's brought to us by Merle Haggard. Take it away, Merle.
We don't smoke marijuana in Muskogee. We don't take our trips on LSD.
I'm Gina Kaufman. This is KCUR's Central Standard, and today we are talking about weed, pot, marijuana, a plant that goes by many names and inspires strong feelings in both directions, pro and anti, but we're interested in which way the wind is blowing here in the Midwest. So that's our question today. Jamie Kaz of the Kansas City chapter of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, also known as NORML, are you surprised by anything you're hearing from our callers?
No, not at all.
Can you elaborate?
I can. There are going to be people who are against legalization, and there's definitely going to be people who are for it for whatever reasons, whether they have a loved one that could benefit from consuming cannabis for health reasons or for any sort of relief. And there's people who are against it, and sometimes the people who are against it have had negative experience, or they're just not equipped with that knowledge that they need.
Jennifer Lowry with us from Children's Mercy Hospital. What about you? Are you surprised by anything you've heard so far?
No, not at all. I mean, again, I agree with Jamie that there's going to be both sides that we are going to listen to and hear. Although I think it's important to note that even in the last caller, the young man who smoked weed also did a lot of other drugs. And that's what his brother said. So I wouldn't be surprised that he would be the one who would smoke weed. So I think that part of this conversation needs to be what about those that kind of population? It may be that it's very can be helpful from a medical standpoint, as we heard from Jessica, but it hasn't been tested to know what harm those are. Is also going to have on populations and the adverse events that could happen with children. And I think that we need to consider those very seriously.
I'm curious about how, I mean, that is something that you hear about marijuana a lot, the gateway drug idea. Mm-hmm. What is the like scientific literature on that? Do we have any?
We do, and I think Jamie would agree that there are both sides that you can actually read about. That one, marijuana doesn't make you crave other drugs, but then there are actually just as many studies that say the opposite, which is that they do. I think as an adolescent, we know that children as young as eighth grade are actually starting to smoke pot, largely, again, because of the perception that it's not harmful. And either, you know, if we were just talking about straight marijuana in the 60s and less potent, we do know that we're not. I mean, we're knowing that it's very it can be highly addictive and the effects are exciting, and they want to make it more drugs from other ways to get the same high.
Let's quickly try to hear from Riley in Shawnee, Kansas. Hi, Riley.
Hi, how's it going?
Good. How about you?
Pretty good. I have a couple questions. With one, I was going to ask. So when I've been listening this whole time, the pediatrician has been relating like marijuana to a lot of more. I mean, they're not more accurate representations. So, like, relating it to tobacco, it's closer, like, there's more knowledge about the damage that alcohol and tobacco do to your body, yet we still have this society that keeps relating. She even admitted that it shouldn't be a Schedule I drug.
Riley, I want to jump in. Can you talk to me a little bit about your personal experience. What is your sense culturally of the attitudes toward marijuana around you? Have you had experiences that have surprised you?
Yeah. So when I was younger, probably about the age 18, we had family friends who were pretty high upstanding characters in the like community around us. And they would have been the first people to send someone that age to jail for smoking marijuana. But in the recent years, from talking to my father and finding things out about them, that they actually were pretty regular users themselves.
So it sounds like there was some surprise about who does and doesn't use marijuana, perhaps, in our community. Jamie, what are your thoughts about that?
About who does and does not use
marijuana? Yeah, and like whether people really have knowledge about that.
Well, I think that still with the stigma that exists around cannabis, a lot of people still don't feel comfortable coming out of the closet and saying that they are a cannabis user. But it goes across the board. I mean, sure, there's people that abuse it, but there's all sorts of people that use it to find relief. It's mothers, it's professionals. It's not just people that are wanting to get high.
Do you think the division over this is primarily scientific, legal, or cultural?
Probably a little bit of all three. I would say that. And I think that I also have to add with the whole concept of it being a gateway drug, I do have to add that it's not really a gateway drug, that you have to really consider alcohol and tobacco of those are being the gateway drugs that we need to be concerned about.
Thank you so much. We're out of time. completely out of time. Jamie Kaz, Normal KC, nice meeting you today.
Nice meeting you too. Thank you for having me.
And Jennifer Lowry, thanks so much for stopping by from Children's Mercy Hospital.
My pleasure. Thank you.
You can listen back to this discussion and share it with your friends at kcur.org/centralstandard later today. That's kcur.org/centralstandard. Tomorrow, we'll have an encore broadcast of our show on Kansas City roller coaster memories. We've got poignant stories about the Zambezi Zinger and the Orient Express lined up now that coaster season is here. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. Special thanks to Matt Hodapp and Cody Newell. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to Date is next. Don't miss it.